Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to be with you here on this Monday evening. It's balmy in here. It doesn't reflect the change in temperature. The room has become more balmy as the weather has changed. Hey, here we go. So here's where I go on the show tonight. It's kind of exciting. Two big pieces of information that I'm excited about. The first one is, this was just a quick count, but quite possibly the second ever Pope-style advice from Dan Hudson. Dan, do we get a preview on this Pope-style?
This is big. I'm talking life-altering, talking about simplicity and honesty.
Simplicity and honesty.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. That's Dan's Pope-style advice. I'm excited to hear that. Also, we have Tim Brand in studio. He is with Many Hands for Haiti. And I'll tell you this. I was on the north side of town, and there was a new thrift store over there. And I thought, hey, that looked kind of cool. And so I swung in there, and all of a sudden I saw, like, there was a bunch of, like, different stations around the thrift store about kind of like engaging with the people of Haiti and helping them and mission work there. And, like, there was just all kinds of neat stuff. And as I walked around the store, I did end up buying a few items. But, like, I just kept looking at this stuff, and I thought, I really like this. And I wanted to know more, and so I did some quick searching on the organization, and it's the thrift store itself is opened by Many Hands for Haiti, and Tim is the founder of this thing. So let's I thought maybe we'd get started by just introducing you to Tim a little bit, have him kind of tell you a little bit about himself, and then we can talk about the organization and kind of what kind of work they're doing in Haiti. So Tim, maybe start out, just tell him a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks for having me on the show. This is a cool format. I've done TV, I've done radio, and this is a new one.
Now you've hit the big time.
I've hit the big time. I am rolling, so it's good. So yeah, Tim Brand. I'm an Iowa kid, born in Des Moines, but lived in Pella most of my life. And God transformed me, truly. My senior year in high school, I went to Haiti in 1998 on a short-term mission trip, just like a lot of people do. And, you know, he tugged at my heart. And in particular, 2 years later, I was on a path, which, you know, I'm at the path here. I was on a path that wasn't of God at that point. And I said to my roommate, you know, this isn't going to end well for me. This isn't where I want to be. And I think I just need to pray. And so I prayed with him, and God spoke, and he said to me, you need to go back to Haiti. I mean, I heard it loud and clear. You need to go back to Haiti. And so then I said to him, I think I need to go to Haiti. And the next morning I woke up, and I went to church, and I came back from church, and there's an email in my inbox saying, hey, will you be a college leader to go back to Haiti with us this next summer? I was like, well, I heard it last night. Here it is. And since then, God's just taken over my life. So definitely a follower of Jesus, disciple of Jesus. In my brokenness, he's able to make me whole and show what he can do through people. I am married, have a wife, a beautiful wife, Katie, who's a teacher and coach at Pella High in Pella, Iowa. And I've got an 8-year-old girl. And anyone who's had 8-year-old girls, they put you to the test for sure.
Yeah.
And a 6-year-old boy who actually tonight, when I was on my way down here, had to go to the hospital real quick to see if he needs stitches in the back of his head, which he didn't. But we've had multiple trips to the emergency room with him because, again, he's a 6-year-old boy. So that's a little bit about me and my life.
I only have so I've got 3 girls. They're 10, 7, and just over a year. So, like, we don't do stitches. We just do, you know, drama and meltdowns.
Yeah, we never had any stitches in the girl. I had 2 girls.
It's cheaper, but certainly more time intensive.
Yeah.
So, quick, funny story on drama girls. My daughter will probably roll her eyes at this one. But so, my wife's in the state tournament this week. She's a volleyball coach at Pella High, and they got second in state. So great for them. They lost in the state finals. My daughter had been with me at multiple games throughout the week, and she was done. I mean, it was time to be done. Sitting in the stands, you can only do it for so long. And so she starts crying and she starts breaking down. And so mom gets done with her game. She sees mom and mom gives her a big hug. And she's like, it's okay, Abby. It's okay that we lost. And she goes, no, it's not. And she's like, what do you mean? She's like, well, dad didn't give me any food. He didn't take care of me. He brought me to these games. I am starving. And my wife just looks at me. He's like, welcome back to the 8-year-old girl. Yeah. And that's pretty much the case.
Back to reality.
Yes.
So I'm interested in the first time that you went to Haiti. So, like, prior to the wandering about, praying with roommate on, and going to church and going back. So you go to Haiti for the very first time, and help me with, like, what did you see there?
So the first time I went, senior year in high school. So, you know, and I had traveled some internationally, but not a ton. And, you know, the first thing you realize, and everyone that goes on a first trip, is you only can see what your eyes are able to see, which is the brokenness right around you. Mm-hmm. Extreme poverty. I mean, you're talking homes that are at most 400 square feet. 70% of them are stick and mud. Over 30% of them still have even banana tree roofs. Mm-hmm. 5 to 6 to 7 in a household. You're seeing kids, you know, having kids. So 15, 16, 17-year-olds having kids. Roads that are not even B-level roads, are gravel roads. I mean, horrible roads, and that's their main roads. And so the first time you go, and for me it was definitely, you just see the poverty. I mean, you just can't get beyond the physical poverty that you see. And so we put a roof on a school. And we did, you know, some food and food distributions. And so, but it was really a struggle, as I think it is a lot of people when they go on those types of missions the first time. They don't know how to process that.
Yeah. I often hear people who've been to Haiti. I have not been there, but I've often heard people say that they, like, feel the darkness there. Did you feel that?
I can't say I necessarily felt it the first time, but since that time, absolutely. Uh-huh. I call Haiti a thin place. There's places in the world that the evil, the darkness, and the light are spiritually battling right in front of you. I mean, like, Israel's one of them. With, like, the Middle East, there's always things happening. Yeah. What people don't understand about Haiti is that's where Christopher Columbus landed. That's where the first time where the Europeans came in. That's where slave trade was routed through, was through Haiti. It was the first place where the slaves gained their independence, and the ravaging that came behind that because of the way the rest of the world treated them. And that there was also a voodoo seance and a voodoo ritual that came with that. Mm-hmm. And so there is a massive spiritual battle that happens in Haiti. And yeah. it is a thin place, and a lot in the northern hemisphere, I believe originates. Haiti's that place where it, you can literally feel it and see it. It's not hidden. It's right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the process. So you go from visiting there, like doing some work there, and then God seems to have put on your heart that, like, you're going to be there for the people of Haiti. Which is, you know what's interesting is the way that you said that. There was just a couple of, who's the missionary that went to China? Hudson Taylor. So it was interesting. He used very similar words when talking about going to China, and so did Patrick. He's like, basically, you're going back for the people of Ireland. Like, it was a broad group of people, and it was like kind of destination. Like, this is where I have you, calling back to somewhere that they've already been. So it's just interesting the language used there. So then you go back the second time. When you returned, was this under as an organization still, or were you still just doing different mission work there?
Yeah, so both times, the first two trips, it was through Meredith Drive Church here out of Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back the second time, and this is where God planted the seed that I can honestly say there's a before and after in my life. That before that trip, after that trip, and what God really revealed to me, and I think a lot of us struggle with this, especially as American Christians, is who's really in control of my life? Am I willing to surrender? Because what I said then, and I've said it multiple times, is God wanted to be the driver in my car, and I did not want him to be. I wanted to be the driver of the car. I wanted, you know, no, I don't think anyone that has necessarily known Jesus or met Jesus, they don't ever say, hey, I don't like this Jesus guy. It's usually, I want Jesus, but I want him to just have a little bit, you know, put him in a box in some way. And so for me, it was, I want him in my car. I definitely want him in my car, but I don't want him to drive.
Yeah.
And when I said, and I learned through this whole process, and it continually, it's a continual process. You don't just learn this and it goes away, is When God is in control of my life, when he's the driver and I just say to him, I'm available, he does incredible things. And that's what I learned in that 2000 trip was that. And then I also, at the end of that time, made a commitment and a covenant to say, I will be involved in this country in some way, shape, or form for the rest of my life. Never think it was going to be like this. I thought it was going to be a sponsored child, go on a trip, but God had different plans. So it's been amazing though.
All right. So what's the next step after that? You're working somewhere else?
So yes, at that point, while I'm still in college, come back, meet my future to be wife. First conversation we have is about Haiti. She had never been there. I go for a long walk with her, as all of us do back in that time. We're trying to court our future wives is, you know, you go for walks, you do things that you wish you did more now, but you don't.
Yeah.
And we talked about Haiti and she loved it. And I said to her, because then we ended up getting married 3 years later, as I said, you are going to have to go to Haiti with me because this is going to be a lifelong passion. So she went with me in 2002. She fell in love with the country just like I did. And then really the couple things that then built on that was in 2004, my church at the time down in Pella did a reverse offering, which means instead of us putting money in the offering plate, they gave money to all the people in the audience and said, here's $25, go make the kingdom and report back to us what to do with the money. So my wife, my dad, my mom, and I, we all piled our money together and said, we got $100. We're going to challenge our friends and family to match our $25, and we're going to try to build a school in Haiti, thinking we're going to raise maybe a couple $1,000. We end up raising over $15,000. And God, again, revealed to me, if you give me a little bit, I'm going to do way more than you imagine. And so we built our first school in 2004. I'm just going to fast forward to it because it's actually pretty incredible. 2005, I'm sitting in the leadership summit, and I am working at this time. I'm sitting in the leadership summit in Chicago at Willow Creek. Bill Hybels and Rick Warren talk back to back. Rick talks about, or Bill Hybels talks about, what's your holy discontents? What is it that you can't stay anymore? What is it that you've been uniquely gifted for to go and do and be a difference in the world? And then Rick talked about what's in your hand. I mean, what's your story? What's God given you? And for me, it was Haiti. And that there's people not working together. There's people that we have these silos of, well, I do this and you do this, so we can't talk, and there's not best practice sharing. And so really I started writing a white paper right then about what we could do in Haiti. And from there it snowballed and started getting churches together. And then in 2009 started the organization.
So talk to me a little bit about that. You're talking about there were people there where they were siloed off. Do you mean like people trying to target specific areas of the Haitian population, people, or was it like somebody was trying to do education, someone was trying to do food? Like what were kind of the distinctions in there?
A little of both. And I think this is one of, I think, the issues on the American church is we are so entrenched in what we do and how we do it that we don't share with other people. We don't always go and share best practices. We don't go share resources. We don't share what we have. I mean, like, this is a beautiful studio. And, you know, how do we use this for God's glory? That he's really king of all. So how do we use this for God's glory? And what we were seeing in Haiti is there was already in churches in Iowa engaged in kind of the community that we worked in, but yet none of them talked. None of them knew what the other church was doing. None of them knew, like, okay, I'm going on a trip. We're going to build a school. Well, then we don't get the school finished, and it sits for a year until we come back. Well, these groups that come behind us could work on the same school, but no one even knows. Mm-hmm. And same with resources. Like, we found out, like, well, I'm paying the same person you paid. Well, he told me you didn't pay him. Well, we did pay him. and so you were like, you know, this, oh my gosh, this revelation, like, wow, we can do all this stuff. And then on the flip side is in Haiti, there was organizations that were really strong and really good, but they weren't talking either. So you've got replication of the exact same things with the exact same kind of structure where we're trying to go, but no one was talking. And so what we really tried to step in and do first initially is let's just talk amongst ourselves. Like, let's just get a form together. We can share best practices. We can learn from each other. We can learn as a church. We can learn as a people, because, you know what, we need to steward our resources. God's given us resources. How do we steward that better? And then in Haiti is, you know, if there's an organization doing education, why are we going to try to replicate doing education? Let's just fund them. If there's a place doing great hospitals, well, let's just fund the hospital. We don't need another clinic. They need our money to run a better hospital, because basically we're just creating competition amongst each other. And so how do we actually work together as the body of Christ and understand where our unique niches are, and then be able to, in God's grace, come together and actually work?
And so have you seen substantial improvement in that area then?
I would say in the U.S., yes, as far as churches and us working together. I would say in Haiti, it's really hard. You know, the first couple of years, that's all we did was basically project manage of projects, project manage of teams coming in, and then try to be a resource for multiple organizations where we're going to bring them together. What you learn in places like Haiti, which we didn't know, is there is an absolute, power structure there. There's a caste system, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of people benefiting off of poverty. And that's something that never even crossed my mind when you first entered this, mm-hmm. is that there's people actually benefiting off of poverty. And they don't really want you to come in and change the structure because they're benefiting off of it.
Right.
So we learned very quickly that that was going to upset a lot of people if we start distributing resources a bit better and start bringing people together. So have we made progress? Yes, we've made progress. But I've also had to take a step back and say, as we gain trust, as we gain reputation, as they see the works, not necessarily just hear about it, there's a groundswell that will occur. And it's coming back to like when Christ walked this earth, he didn't go right to the leaders of the synagogues and the Sadducees and the Pharisees, which is kind of interesting. He went to the people. Because they were actually the people that were holding people back from God. The people that were supposed to be for God were holding them back from God. And we see that a lot in a country like Haiti, where the people that should be the protectors are actually sometimes the one that are in the way. And so we've really done a good job of getting out to the people and equipping them. And when the people are on board, then actually the leaders come on board because they want to be on the right side of the swell. And so we've tried to create this grassroots swell that then allows us to grow, and then at that time they can't stop it at that point.
So you get up to the point where you're going to be creating this organization, Many yep. Hands for Haiti. There's a lot of good things you could be doing with your life, right? There's a lot of ways to help the world. When you look at what you've done so far up to that point, and you know that there are other groups, organizations, people kind of involved, you know, what is the unique vision for Many Hands for Haiti? What do you want to do?
When I was really debating about going full-time in this ministry and really stepping on a leap of faith, I remember specifically I was listening to Gary Haugen, and Gary Haugen started the International Justice Mission. And he was talking about, you know, justice and justice for the poor and justice for those that have no justice and being a voice. And the story he talked about, and it resonates to me today, is when he was a young boy, he went to Mount Rainier. And he went with his brothers, and there's a visitor center at the bottom of Mount Rainier, and it's, you know, got all the stuffed animals and the videos, and it's nice and cozy, and you're on Mount Rainier, but you're not really experiencing Mount Rainier. And his brothers wanted to go up on this path that led to the base camp where people actually hike Mount Rainier, and Gary basically said, I don't want to go on that path. It looks scary. You know, there's all these signs saying danger, falling rocks, and all that kind of stuff. And so Gary convinced his dad that, I just want to stay in this visitor center. You guys go ahead. Well, for the first couple hours, Gary's pretty excited with himself. You know, he basically says, you know, I can see these videos. I've got all these animals, all these people here. It must be the right place to be. Well, then after a few hours, it just became stale. You know, all those animals were just dead, and all those videos were just on repeat.
Yeah.
And he started to miss his family and miss his dad and his brothers. And his brothers came back a few hours later. You know, they were all flush in their face, and they had scrapes, and they had cuts, and they had bruises. But they'd been on an adventure with their God, with their father. You know, they had gone someplace with their father. And Gary said, I was on the mountain. It wasn't like I wasn't on Mount Rainier, but I'd missed the adventure that God had for me. And that's where, for me, it just dawned on me. It's like, I was a Christian. I was a follower of Jesus. But yet, God had something incredibly more. And I never wanted to look back in that moment and say, I didn't go on the mountain because I didn't trust what God wanted to do. And so, just had to submit control of that and say, okay, God, do what you want to do. And through that, our thing, and why are we uniquely gifted? I think we're uniquely gifted because we talk about we're all called for transformation, and we're transforming together. And as we engage in Haiti, and as we engage here, it's not, is America better, is Haiti better, it's how do we create a Christian culture? How do we create it where God can really break through in people's lives and transform them, because we're all broken. It's just our brokenness looks different. And so we've been able to carve out a unique space in that, in trying to do something in Haiti that I think is unique and different, but also back here is unique and different, which comes back to the thrift store and what why, how you even got me on this show.
Right.
So yeah, that's where I think we've tried to carve out a unique space.
So that's interesting. Like, can you help me understand a little bit more, how that, transaction's not the word I'm looking for, how that interchange works. Like, it's interesting to think that by engaging in some of the things that Many Hands for Haiti is doing for Haiti, you have the benefit of transformation, of our culture, more aligning to kingdom work and principles and things. So, like, how does that happen? How does that work out tangibly?
Okay. So, what we talk about in Haiti is that the reason why transformation doesn't happen is because they haven't had the right foundation to be able to build economically, religion. There's a lot of false teachings. They haven't had it educationally. And so there's a foundation we build up on. That's not our problem here in the States. I mean, we've had a foundation to build upon. But what I see happen in the culture, what God has really laid on my heart, is that we are a distracted culture, and that the devil and Satan has led us buy into this lie that more stuff brings more happiness, that we need to be numb, pain-free, problem-free, that we don't need to have any struggles, and that through that, that's what brings happiness. And it's a complete falsity. Right. I mean, there's this weird dichotomy of pain and joy. Like, those that have had the most pain also are some of the most joyful people in the world. And what people come when they engage in this from the States, there's two things that happen. Number one, it slows them down enough so they can actually hear God speak. God is always speaking. The question is, are you actually listening? But we fill ourselves with all this stuff that we think is going to bring happiness, and it actually brings more problems. And then secondly, is that through that, when they like go to Haiti or they enter into this, they're exposed to the pain that God sees all the time in this world. Because we have kind of numbed out the pain. We have put TVs in front of us.
Right.
We have put shows in front of us. We put alcohol in front of us. We put sex in front of us. We put, you know, kids programs and sports, and this is do. And we've put that in front of us. And what that does is it actually doesn't allow us to enter that pain, because the problem is that there is no pain, there is no ability to retain joy. What I talk about is pain is that it carves out that hollow space inside of you. It carves into your soul. So when God wants to come and dump into you, there's a place to retain it. And I think that's everyone that becomes a true follower of Christ, a disciple of Christ, we understand the pain because we know where we've come short.
Right.
And so again, we're introducing these pains that are out there and that are real, but people are just buzzing by them in our world. And it doesn't make sense for most of them. If I say, well, there's, you know, 1.5 million people without access to education, hey, that means nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, but if I can make it more tangible for them through easier ways to get access to that, and then that engagement process where they can go deeper, where they can maybe actually go to Haiti, they can talk to people from Haiti, they can see people in Haiti. Because through that, then God will come back and he will use it for his glory. And that's what we're trying to engage into. And so tangibly, what's that look like? I've seen transformed lives in people that have gone on a trip and they have learned how to live a life that follows God. So here's what I hear from mission trips, and you guys, you're going to International Mission Conference. I hear people come back all the time and say, I want to move to Haiti. They go back from there. I want to move to Haiti. This is such an awesome place. I felt so close to God. And I'm like, you really don't want to move to Haiti. Talk to me about this trip. What happened? Well, okay, when I woke up in the morning, we did devotions. Yep, you did. You did devotions. And okay, what did you do next? Well, then we went out and we served in the community. Okay, so you served without any thought of what you're getting in return. Okay, great. What'd you do at night? Well, we came back at night and we sang and we prayed together and we discussed our day. So you lived in community with your brother and sister. And so you felt close to God. I said, that's not Haiti. That's living an intentional life.
Right.
But we have that opportunity for 7 to 10 days to help hopefully show them something different. And then they can come back here and say, that's not because you're in Haiti. That's right. Because you lived a life that was different. And so then we've seen people take that and they come back and they're better fathers, they're better mothers, they're better community members, they're better church members, they're more giving. And hopefully we start that process where ultimately they are living a life on call as a missionary, wherever they're at. It doesn't take you to move to Haiti, but hopefully Haiti can be one of those things that allows people to discover what God wants to do with their life.
It's really interesting. A couple of those things is really interesting. The first one was you were talking about some of our blindness, like as worldly connected as we believe ourselves to be, it's still manufactured. And even the pain that we understand from a world perspective is generally the pain of people who still have a voice to still be able to share it worldly. Whereas, you know, some of the folks you're otherwise interacting with, they wouldn't have had, they don't have the opportunity to otherwise express that pain, to deepen our understanding of the world around us anyway. And so it's just interesting. What was going through my mind was, is that like we are so much, at least in perception, better connected than we were as a world 40 years ago. But just like the history books, our connection is by, is still to the winners, is still to the people who have the ability to have a voice. And then thinking that, the experiences that people have when they go on a mission trip of that sort, it does tend to be a heightened experience. You have the opportunity to go, you're serving intentionally, you know, you do get the chance to interact with people. It tends to be a more focused experience. And so you're right about that. And then when the question is like, when we bring that back, like watching that change in people's lives, is a beautiful thing. But there, I guess one of the things that occurred to me while you were explaining it, I thought, like, we're almost, it feels like stealing. It feels like stealing for our own good. We're getting healed from our brokenness a little bit, like from being able to engage in that culture. And then if we just kind of take that back and now we're kind of better Americans now for having done that, we've used, I suppose there's a risk in using their brokenness to heal ours without healing theirs.
Right. And that's where I go back to and really push into that is we are called as Christians to enter into each other's brokenness. Like, I mean, Christ said it. That's why. Why did he not spend all his time sitting in the temples? I mean, he went out and he was with the people. I mean, he physically went out and healed. He physically went out and restored. He physically went out and taught. He physically went out and trained. I mean, he didn't just reside in one place. I mean, he walked. And at that point, you know, a pretty big breadth of land, even though in our minds it's not. But I mean, he walked it. There was no cars. There's no travel.
Yeah.
And so he physically went out and saw it himself. And what I will say is we as Christians need to enter into that engagement. It's not stealing. It's called seeing God's eyes. Because God is seeing the pain from his perspective.
Right.
And do we want to enter that or not? Because the other thing I will say is, yeah, it'd be stealing if it's not a two-way street. But the other thing I will say is we, as American Christians in particular, are incredibly blessed in some areas. So, yeah, we're probably on the short end side of relationally a lot of ways. Emptiness, feeling of like, what's the purpose? I just make all this money and what do? And like, I don't feel like I'm connected and I'm so busy. I'm so distracted. I've got all this stuff. On the flip side with Haiti is they need our some of our economics. I mean, they live in homes that we wouldn't put our dogs in. Mm-hmm. I've got kids that die every day because they don't have food and we throw away gobs of food. I'm not trying to make us feel guilty, but it's the truth. It's reality. I've got people that will walk hours because they think we can help them in some way, shape, or form. And so then you go back and say, well, what can we give? Well, we can give particularly leadership. We've been trained. I mean, even I go back to a lot of, because people say, well, I have nothing to give. What we have learned for those that have been in church about biblical perspectives and biblical teachings, even our Sunday school is a lot more than what a lot of the people of Haiti have learned about God. So we can share Jesus. And not that they don't know Jesus, but they don't know that Jesus is Lord of all and what that looks like. We can share a lot of our education. I mean, we are highly educated people when we want to be. I mean, sometimes we kind of turn it off, I think, but we can be. We can share our resources. We are so incredibly blessed that we are the richest people in the history. We're the richest Christians in the history of the world ever, both as an individual group and as a church. And what are we going to do with that? And when we stand before our King and we say, what did he do with what I gave you? We have to have an answer for that.
Yeah.
And so it's not stealing if you are in turn walking with each other, but you have to look at it and saying, well, you can't look at it and say, I'm on high and I'm here, there, and I'm the one coming down. It's like, no, we're on level playing field and we are both broken because we are. but yet where we enter into it's different.
Yeah, I mean the it sounds like the right way to think about it is like God has uniquely given those two cultures the ability to help heal each other, right? Like the things right. where we are blessed, we have the ability to otherwise heal some of their brokenness, and then we're not only engaging in that. And Paul talks about that at the end of Philippians, like it is the blessing for you to be able to give.
Correct.
And so you're able to do that, and then that heals some of our blindness, our brokenness, the thing that the money can't do. The reason a culture that's rich as ours is still functioning under things like what are we here for? What are we actually doing? And finding that value, and it's such that's such a healthy way to see our interaction with other people bearing God's image and likeness is seeing our opportunity to engage with, to mutually engage in our brokenness, to come out less broken than we were by kind of sharing that amongst each other.
Right. And that's where short-term missions have taken a pretty big hit in the media and in a lot of other places, and rightfully so in some of the cases where it is a God complex, where people are coming down and thinking that, well, I'm here, they're there, thus I come, I give, I do, you know, it's a me focused way of doing missions. And what we really harp on and try to do is that this is when you go, you are a learner first, and you're there to experience. Yes, we're going to do some things, but not to the detriment of the people. You're going to walk alongside of them. You're going to work on cement floors, for example. We put a lot of cement floors, and you're not going to replace a job that we already had hired. You're going to work beside that job worker, and you're going to make his life easier, and you're going to serve him.
Right.
You're bringing the rocks to him, so that day he doesn't have to haul the rocks.
Yeah.
He's still getting paid the same. But you have to haul the rocks that day.
Yeah.
And you're going to haul the rocks. And then you're going to see what that's like. Because, again, we as Americans, we always have the best ideas, of course. Mm-hmm. So you come in and say, we're going to do this. And then once they start working on them, they're like, I don't understand how they even do that all day. I mean, like, it's trying to get them deep into the culture. And you're never going to figure it out in a one trip. But, and that's where our staff, we have staff on Haiti that's there full time. That's their job. It's not the short-term missionship. So I go back to, I think short-term missions are a beautiful thing when they're done well,
yeah,
and they're done right, and they're done with the forethought of, you know what, there's pre-work that needs to be done, there's work that needs to be done when you're there, and there's work that needs to be done when you come home, because this is part of God shaping experiences. And we are only who we are because of the experiences that we have gathered.
Right.
But we have to enter into it. We can't just shut ourselves out. I mean, I think it's a lie directly from the devil to say short-term missions are a waste of time, because that's going to make people be more closed off, put them in more boxes, and just say, well, again, there's no trust, so I'm just, why would I put my money there?
Right.
And that's exact opposite thing that Christ really wants. It really is.
Right. So just because there might be 100 ways to do something wrong doesn't mean you don't do it. You just need to figure out the better way
and learn from experiences. I still go back to, number one, all of our stuff is God's stuff anyway.
Yeah.
We're all just on loan here. I mean, so what we do with it ultimately is going to be His anyway. The question is, are you going to learn from experiences? Or are you going to get better from it? Are you going to act in obedience? The success is His. I mean, you can't take a finite God or an infinite God and basically try to look at it from a finite lens. We have finite lenses. God's an infinite God. We'll never make sense of it here on this earth. So we, in turn, have to be obedient and say, okay, He sees a better view than I do. So if He said for me to write this check, or for me to go on this trip, or for me to do something that I don't 100% understand, if He's told you to do it, you need to be obedient to it. The success is His.
Right. So, to tell me a little bit about the different aspects that you're involved with in Haiti. Like, it looks like you have impacts on, you talked a little about leadership development, education, providing safe homes, or at least involved with other organizations that are doing that kind of thing. Tell me a little bit about those different aspects.
So, there's six core elements that we do, three that are foundational. One is in education, and where we really are, you know, I think we've wrestled with as an organization is, what's our unique identity? You know, God, I think, gives every church, individual, like, unique identities. If we weren't existing, what would be missing in the world? And for us, it's 0 to 5 year old programs. For kids that are 0 to 5 and parents that are trying to take care of those kids. Because in the life of a person, the first 1,000 days is the most important physically. If you don't feed a kid from 0 to 3, they will be stunted for the rest of their life. emotionally, if those kids are beaten, if those kids know they're not wanted, if they know they're not loved, that will reflect on the rest of their lives. If they don't know that God loves them from the beginning, that causes problems all the way down the line. So we do some very intentional programs for 0 to 5-year-olds. And then we also, though, take it deeper and we take care of their parents. So we do parent training, both on health and spiritual development, with the intention that we hope in 5 years that the parents can be self-sustaining. That's the hope. That's the goal, is that we'll take care of the first 5 years, but you have to be self-sustaining there moving forward.
Right.
So we do some very intentional programs around that. It's called a Thrive for Five program. That also leads into leadership development. So we do some very, very disciplined, servant heart leadership development for different communities, which I call it, it's turning the soil. You have to have soil that can bear good fruit. And if there isn't leadership in a community, it's tough for the people to transform because they're going to get snuffed out. It's going to be like when, you know, you throw the seeds on the rocky soil and the birds come and eat it. We have to try to create the soil where it's going to be able to grow. And third's in agronomy. And agronomy at the heart of it is actually economic development. So there's three ways you can create wealth in a country. One is in light manufacturing. Two is in mining. Three is in agronomy. Agronomy is the easiest. It's the, you take a seed that has very little value, you plant it, you have 100 more, all of a sudden you have margin. The misconception in countries like Haiti and all over the world is that people don't work hard. That is an absolute lie. They work harder than we do every day. Otherwise they die. I mean, they have to go walk to get their water. There is no kitchen. There's no running water. There's no toilet flushes. There's no lights you flick on. I mean, everything is manual. But the problem is that there's no margin. Like, we did a survey of our community, and out of the people that were vendors, they were making less than 5% on everything they sold. Well, you can't make any money on 5%. There's, right. I mean, you're staying out there all day selling stuff to make a dollar. I mean, it's just crazy. So that's where agronomy comes back into the place, where we're planting seeds. We have commercial banana farm. We have gardens. We have an agronomy technical school to help them understand that how to grow products. So you're going to reap, you know, you have a seed that has very little value. Now it has 100 times over. Now you got margin. And you can feed your own country, which is great. So if you can do those three things well, you move on to the next level, which means we're going to do safe homes. So anyone that's ever worked with homeless people understand what type of ramifications come if you don't have a safe home.
Yeah.
So we do a lot with cement floors. We do a lot with home rebuilds, and we hire locals to go do that to create safety in that home. Number two is medical assistance. It's not that there isn't medical access in countries like Haiti. The problem is it's only limited to those with power and money. So unfortunately, a lot of the people we work with, they'll go to the hospital, but they won't get seen because people don't think they can pay for it. So they'll wait hours, days to be seen, but they aren't going to see them. So when we come in with them, unfortunately, they'll get seen. I mean, fortunately, but unfortunately, they'll get seen because they know, well, there's an American organization that's with them and they're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
We also work with a lot of the disabled. So we have what's called the pet carts. And if you probably sell it at a store, it's with the handicap driven carts by hand. And, what we found in Haiti in particular is that people believe that if people are handicapped, they're cursed.
Right.
That they've done something wrong in their life, thus that's why they're paralyzed or they're handicapped. And they're unloved. They are like the lowest form of what's around. They literally sit on the floor, on a dirt floor in the back of the house, have no independence, have to have people take care of them. And what these carts do is they come in and they give their independence back, because now they can go to the bathroom on their own, they can go to the shower on their own, the kids can go to school, they can sell stuff out of their cart, then go to market. It's amazing to see these people that had no value in society, and because we love them and we're showing love, now all of a sudden the people are like, oh, like we can love them too. And it's a really cool thing to see. And then lastly is economic development through sewing programs, which is light manufacturing. And we do that particularly with women groups. So we believe if we can do those six things well in combination in an area where I call it, you know, stackable solutions, where you're trying to lift people out of poverty, that creates individual transformation, which creates family transformation, because in Haiti, villages literally are made up of families. Like there's brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles that all live together. So one starts to change, the family starts to change, the family starts to change, the village starts to change. When the villages change, the community starts to change, the community starts to change, then the point is to go multiply. And so then we believe that God's going to create a ripple, and he's going to create something that's going to be bigger than we've ever seen before, that's going to flood through the country. But it's going to come from nationals, Haitians, that are equipped by people, by God's people, that are going to go out and change their country.
Does the would you say the spreading of spiritual change in Haiti, does that follow the same type of process? peoples, to families, to communities, to...
Yes, absolutely. And what we see in Haiti is it's... Because they're so close to the United States in particular, there's a lot of U.S. influence.
Yeah.
I actually call it very much like Israel was back when Jesus walked the earth, because we are Rome. United States is Rome. Rome was over Israel. Technically, United States isn't over Haiti, but there's a ton of influence from the United States. Then you got Haiti, who was just like Israel, mm-hmm. who they have their government leaders. Israel had their leaders. That was supposed to be taking care of the country, but unfortunately, they were the ones actually taking from the country, just like a lot of the Haitian government takes from their people. And then that's where Jesus planted his ministry. And so for us, you know, we believe that that's there on the spiritual side of things. So they know the name of Jesus, but, and it's probably true in our culture too, but they don't know the lordship of Christ, that they believe Jesus is at the same level as evil spirits. So you will, because they believe in a fatalistic religion, animalistic, very much so, dualistic a lot of times too, where you'll go to church on Sunday to praise Jesus because Jesus brings the blessings. And then on Monday night, you go do a voodoo seance ritual and sacrifice your goat because you want to keep the evil spirits away. So what we talk a lot about and we try to show is that Jesus is Lord of all. So you don't need to go do the goat seance and go to the voodoo rituals.
Right.
Because if you're praising Jesus, he has dominion over that. He has power over that. So he is Lord of all. And thus, he's got it all.
Right.
And that's something that is definitely not taught in the culture.
Gotcha. So, are there other organizations? I'm trying to think of what I'm trying to ask here. So the good news has always been both physical and spiritual, right? Jesus heals.
Yep.
Jesus still spreads truth. But both are true. It sounds like a lot of what you're doing has supplies a lot of the physical needs. Otherwise, things that would be barrier to people understanding anything else that you'd want to bring. So have you noticed or does that produce a desire for spiritual change as part of that process? Yeah. Or is that something you have to do intentionally in different ways?
Yeah, no. So we were very intentional about this because what we were seeing initially when we started off in Haiti was a lot of people were coming to us and saying, I know Jesus, thus will you help me?
Yeah.
Like they were almost using Jesus again as they knew Americans loved to hear, especially American Christians loved to hear, oh, well, they love Jesus.
Right.
Or they're even a pastor. Like, I'm a pastor, thus you should help me.
Yeah.
And what we said, we saw that, and that's what we originally started doing, and like, oh man, this is not good. And so what we basically did is we flipped it on its head and said, you know what? We're going to serve everybody. We're going to literally go out and we're going to serve and be the hands and feet of Christ. And then at the same time, we're going to hopefully have them ask the question, why are you doing this? Because the thing I left out in that whole thing, so those six areas,
yeah,
those are all tools for us to talk about Jesus. Every single one of them are tools to talk about Jesus. Because we also have chaplain on staff that he goes around and meets with all the families that we do this ministry with. So when they get a cement floor, the chaplain follows up with them. When we go do like feeding programs, the chaplain follows up with them. When we go out and we give a pet card to someone, they get a Bible and the chaplain follows up with them. With a Haitian, one-to-one in his house.
Yeah.
So it's very relational.
Right.
And what's awesome is over the last 3 months, we've had over 56 people give their life to Christ. We've had over 36 recommit to Christ. And this is the last 3 months.
Right.
And then we've also started what we call a little church. Because the thing, again, is there is churches in Haiti. I'm not going to say they're corrupt, but there's definitely some issues with the leadership in the church. So we said that we don't want to replace that because we do think that the church is the bride of Christ and that, you know, there's things that he needs to work out, but we also need to strengthen it. And so we don't want to compete against the pastors that are working, but we also want to come beside them. So that's where leadership training comes in, and we do pastor training. But then we also, we do a little church, we call it little church, on Wednesdays, where it's a come as you are service, because it's very legalistic in Haiti that people think I have to have the right shoes, I have to have the right clothes in order for me to go to church. So that's why they're not going. So right. We said, well, let's just do a little church on Wednesdays. And it is amazing to see the turnout that we get for this. And it's all driven by the community. Like, so they actually lead it. We have pastors that come in, but they do it. And we hold them accountable of what they're teaching and what they're doing and how where the stewardship of the money and that kind of stuff. But yet they're the ones responsible for it. So again, all these things are just avenues for us to talk about Jesus, because we want to lead, because again, I go back to, I think the gospel is so much better to be caught than it is to be taught. Mm-hmm. People want to see it versus they just want to hear it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's true. And I would say, like, you even are, like, the American culture is predominantly taught force, right? Like, we're we're relying on the compelling nature of fighting an idea, but there's an underlying desire to look tangible output of what that idea look like. Like, if this changes the world, why don't I see the world changing? Whereas, if I'm a Haitian on the other side of some of what's going on, the world is changing, mm-hmm. right? Like, there is good news available that I see tangibly, and then I seek the source of it, right? And then there's the answer to that question,
right?
So that's the Haitian side. Tell me a little bit about what you guys do on the domestic side. How do you fund all of this? What is the what does it look like kind of on the American end, and how do people interact with it?
So in 2011, end of 2011 is when I went full time on this thing, and I was a business person by trade, and there was two big issues that I had that really started us down the path that we're on now. Number one is, how do you take something as foreign and as far away as Haiti that people have no concept of, and they really, it's not on their brain at all. I mean, when the earthquake happened, that was pre-earthquake. I mean, this was when we first did this, is pre-earthquake. So people didn't even know. A lot of people thought Haiti was in Africa. I mean, they're like, Haiti, I don't know. Is it Africa? Where is it? I don't know. So how do you take something that's as non-tangible and as foreign in a foreign country, and how do you make that relevant for us? And how do you get in front of people, you know, so they get their eyes on it?
Yep.
And number two is, how do we do all this stuff that we have? And how do we give this to God and say, God, okay, we have the stuff. What do we do with it? Because here's what I was getting. And so I remember very distinctly, we did a soccer shoe drive beginning in 2012. And I thought I would get like maybe 50, 60 shoes, a pairs of soccer shoes. Well, I got over like 250 pairs of soccer shoes. It was an insane amount of numbers of soccer shoes. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, well, I got to get these to Haiti. How am I going to do that? Well, I ended up going to a thrift store, which I've never been to a thrift store. It wasn't even on my radar screen. And I went and bought like $2 suitcases. While I'm there, I'm looking around. I'm like, this place is packed. Like, there's tons of people in this place. Uh-huh. And I go to check out, and behind me it says, last year this thrift store sent $200,000 to Romania for Bibles. I'm like, none of these people have even been to Romania. Like, they don't know what, I mean, again, it's like no connection here. It was just like, well, we just buy the stuff here.
Right.
And so it got my wheels turning, because the problem is when I would take my 200, and I've taken 250 pairs of soccer shoes, or I've taken a container of clothes down, or that kind of thing, is you get to a place like Haiti, and how do you distribute that ethically? How do you distribute that morally? How do you distribute that so it's fair? How do you distribute that so, you know, you are... Again, I want to go on this. I want to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And what I found was, I mean, once I'm distinctly, we handed out all these shoes, and I get done with that, and I'm feeling kind of good about myself, and I walk around the corner, and there's the marketplace, and there's literally hundreds of people trying to sell clothes and shoes, not the ones I gave them, but they're trying to sell clothes and shoes. And what did I just say to those people that are trying to sell clothes and shoes? Hey, don't worry about actually trying to make a livelihood. Just wait for us American Christians to come down and we'll take care of you. That's wrong.
Yeah.
That's just flat out wrong. And so I looked at it and said, well, how can we do this better? And so I knew we again, some people will write us a check, but not everybody.
Yeah.
Some will volunteer some time, but not everybody. But if I said to someone, hey, will you give me some of your stuff? Oh my gosh, it's like, oh, you got closets. What do you want? I've got a garage full of stuff. I actually rent places to store my stuff.
Right.
And I pay money for it to store all my stuff that I never even use, but someday I think I might need it.
Uh-huh.
And so I basically looked at it and said, let's take this stuff, let's sell it here locally, because there is a need right in our backyard. There's a need right here for people that need a higher quality item at a lower cost, which will allow us then to have volunteers that'll come work it, which allow us to tell the stories of what God's doing in a place like Haiti in a non-offensive, non-in-your-face way, will allow commerce to actually happen. So there's money exchange, which creates dignity. It's not just free handouts here for people here either. They're actually dignity of buying something. And then in turn, we take the money and we bring that to Haiti. And then instead of us giving us our free crap, we're basically saying, here's money to go start a job. What do you want to do? and we can help fund so you could actually do it. And then you, in turn, are actually creating commerce in your own country. And so it's so much better way. I mean, the first way has like one to maybe two people that are actually interchanging. The second one has four or five, sometimes six people that are actually in the process and engage in the process. And so back here, we engage in business.
Right.
We believe that God wants to be Lord of, heaven forbid, commercialism, commerce. He wants to be Lord of businesses. And how can we use those businesses to flip them on their head? Because we're not a church, and we're not planning to be a church. I mean, we might be a non-traditional church, but we're not planning to be the church as we've had set up.
Mm-hmm.
But we still can talk about Jesus.
Sure.
We can still have people enter it. We can still have people give their resources and give their time and give their treasure. It's just going to be easier for them to do it. And then at the same time, introduces something that's better and different than they've ever imagined if they want to enter into it.
And I noticed, and so I said that kind of at the top of the program, is that's how I became familiar with the organization. And so my wife and I had gone into this. There's a new one that just opened in Grimes.
Yep.
And it was next to Froyo, and I got Froyo questions. But it was really cool to go around. I saw some of the output from the light manufacturer, like the, there were some bracelets and yep. necklaces and things
yep.
like that.
Yep.
It looks like they were made from like rolled up paper or something. Like, yep. I don't know, it was cool.
They're taking garbage. Yeah, they're basically upcycling garbage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was cool looking. Yep. Like it was, mm-hmm. it was cool. And there was, you know, there. One of the things that it may have struck me as like it's too bad, but it was also very cool. Is like the stories that were associated with the things. Like it made me want to buy it more, and I thought, well, that's it puts a person to it, right?
Correct.
It puts a person to an issue. There was a station where you can have like in-home, or you can do it there too, I think, but like you can have in-home parties where you basically cut diapers.
Yep.
So this, you can take diapers, and I assume those get sent over and yep. Distributed to ladies and kids who need them out of your old cloth.
Yeah, we actually, we pay women in Haiti to sew them.
Oh, sweet.
So you're cutting the product, because we've all got t-shirts.
Yeah.
And you can do this in a group, very low setting. We do it in schools. We do it in youth groups. We do it in student councils. We do it in, you know, all kind of things. And again, it allows you to start that conversation. But then we take the product and we send it down to Haiti, and then we pay people to actually sew it. And so it's not only creating the product, but it's actually creating a job.
I love that. I love that. Like it brings richness and depth within a culture as opposed to disrupting it. It says we come along and like where there are gaps that we can otherwise provide support and fill in some of those gaps and help you be the you that you want to be or the culture that you are. It helps do that as opposed to, and I think it's the same concern that you were kind of talking about a little bit when it comes to short-term missions, right? Like, are you going in and disrupting a culture for your benefit? That's theft.
Yes.
Or are you going in there and like, again, mutually sharing in brokenness and gifts and all those different things, so both cultures are kind of enriched by that, and ultimately grow closer together. It's kind of this broad culture of kingdom folk kind of living in both of those things. So, I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah. So, at the thrift store, one of the things that because one of the questions we get a lot is, well, Haiti doesn't need our help. We have our own problems here in our country. 100% agree.
Yeah.
100% agree. And so we have what's called our local impact program. And most people don't even know this, but we've got a program basically that when you donate stuff to the back door, we will ask you, do you attend a church? Do you have a home church? And if you say yes, we will log the church. And then we, in turn, will give gift cards back to the church in $20 increments that they can go and use to go be the church to their own people. Because one thing I've seen with the American church is sometimes we don't know how to engage in poverty alleviation type things.
Yeah.
It's a struggle for us a lot of times. And so we will provide you. So when you see a need, when someone walks off the street saying, hey, I need help, or there's been a death in the family, or there's someone lost a job, or there's a fire, or there's a newborn baby that was out of wedlock and someone just needs a hand up on this, we're going to give you gift cards. Because your people are given in the back door, and thus in turn, you can go and use that and go do that. That's just something we do.
Yeah.
And then we also do a furniture ministry out of that, where we are giving between 200 to 250 homes, people coming out of homelessness, that they are in transitional homes, so they've got their first apartment, they got nothing, and we actually are giving them furniture. And so they get a table, they get a chairs, they get a nightstand, they get a drawer and a dresser, and that's coming out of the gifts that we have. So not only does your dollars are going to help globally in something that, you know, might not see, but it's going to help right in your backyard as well.
Yeah. You know what I'm hearing from that description is like, we've got enough to go around.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, like it's some people feel like there's an either or, some people feel like we're not doing anything at home if we're sending all our money elsewhere, and from frankly the way that you're talking about it, we got it. We got it to give. We got it that we don't even want. That's enough to go around.
Well, God can do exceedingly more than we ever imagine, we ever think. And I think sometimes, again, we go back and God is a God of abundance. Man is a person of scarcity. And a lot of times we're going to put it in like, well, there's not enough. So yes, it's, if I'm getting a pie, then that means you're stealing my pie, or somehow my pie shrinks when I have to do this. And it's like, no, the kingdom of God is an abundance. It's taking, you know, five loaves and two fish and having 13 baskets left over.
Right.
And we don't remember that at times. We come and we put this in our mind and think, oh, if I give, then it's, I go back to, here's the thing. When I went full time, and I'm somewhat shameless, I feel bad for even saying this at times. When I went full time, at that point, I was given somewhere around between $10,000 to $15,000 a year to the organization. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, my money's going to go away. I'm not going to be able to give that anymore. And now I got to get a salary. You know, how am I going to do that? And now I'm going to be a drain on the organization. And again, that's the scarcity mindset that comes into play. And what God just, again, I think he just standing back there laughing. He's like, do you trust me or not? Because yeah. I'm going to raise your salary. Because that's basically what I did, is I said, I'm not going to take from those that have given already. I'm going to go raise my salary from people that I know, that know me, trust me, and want to give so I can do this full time.
Yep.
And what he did is he quadrupled the organization in 3 years. And in the last 5 years, we've grown over, I think it's now, it's probably over 15 times over. And I go back to my first thought was, what's going to happen with that $10,000 that I gave a year? What's going to happen with that money that I need to be able to make a salary? Because there's not going to be enough to go around.
Yeah.
And yeah. God just, it's, we got to stop putting him in a box. I mean, he wants to be a God of abundance, but you have to trust fully. It can't be, I've got one hand here and one in here. I'm going to hold on to the rope, and I'm just going to make sure I've got both sides taken care of. It's a complete surrender.
It's a different perspective on your right hand not knowing what the left is doing. That seems to still have an application. It's like, it's just acting in faith over here.
Yep.
It's not bargaining and checking out. Are we still holding on to the rope before the wind comes?
Well, Mother Teresa, I love Mother Teresa's stuff. She was just phenomenal, and she just baffles me. But one of the things she talked about is that you have to love until it hurts. When's the last time that any of us have actually loved until it hurts? When's the last time we've given until it actually hurts? Either of our time, of our treasure, of our talents. You know, we give, but usually it's out of our abundance.
Right.
And the world needs more people. Christ needs more people. The church needs more people that are going to give until it hurts, that are going to love until it hurts, because that's what Christ did. Christ gave it all. I mean, he loved until it hurt to death.
Yeah.
And we hear that, but yet there's a block.
No, right. We have this concept that, like, hey, we really want to make a difference as long as we don't notice the difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not even sensical. Boy, wait a minute. There's a lot of good things in there, and I get distracted about my froyo. So there's a frozen yogurt stand connected with this thing. Tell me about the frozen yogurt.
So frozen yogurt came about when I was building the first thrift store up in Grimes, or up in Spencer, Iowa. I took the volunteers out for his appreciation, and we went to a frozen yogurt spot.
Mm-hmm.
And jokingly, they said to me, you should do one of these things. This would be great for you to do. And I kind of looked around. I'm like, yeah, we could probably do something like this. and it goes back to, how many times have you ever heard people say to you, you shouldn't be spending $4 on a frozen yogurt. There's people starving in Africa. Or you shouldn't be paying $3 for Starbucks coffee because there's people starving in the world. Which is 100% true.
Yeah.
But who's ever stopped going to those places because someone has said that?
They just felt more guilty.
Yeah, you just kind of feel more guilty about it. Well, yeah, okay, maybe I'll throw a few more dollars on a plate, but I'm still going to get my Starbucks coffee. Uh-huh. So the question is, again, is God the Lord of all? And are you going to sit there and complain about people buying $4 frozen yogurts, or are you going to enter and say, okay, people are going to buy it, so how about instead of basically trying to slam and make them feel guilty for it, we're going to say, okay, we'll use that, and we're going to flip it on its head, And you're going to come in for your $4 frozen yogurt still, but while you're doing it, you're going to read about kids in Haiti. You're going to read about programs that you can do cement floors and how you can engage in leadership development and how, so every time you get a frozen yogurt, you get a chip because every $5 you get a dollar that's going to go back to the programs and you can then select, do I want that to go to feeding programs? Do I want to start that with education programs? Do I want to go that with leadership development programs? And the cool thing about that is then it engages in conversations. I hear moms and kids start talking about stuff that, you know, because the kid gets to select and they're like, well, what do they mean education programs? And the mom kind of has to, sometimes they don't know, but they start saying stuff. And so it just changed the conversation because people are going to do it in our culture anyway. So the question is are we as Christians going to engage in that and fight it? Or are we going to say, you know what, we can be part of that.
Right.
And we can change the conversation on it.
Right. It's simply making the most out of your opportunity. That, like, if you're going to do it anyway, we are still a capitalist mindset. Like, how do I, except you're battling for something different.
Right.
Right. Like, you're fighting for what's the value in what, where it is that I'm giving my money, which
right.
we kind of stink at, by the way. Like, I've heard some, I was talking to some people, even within the last month, and like, capitalism sucks. Like, it doesn't work. I'm like, well, we don't really do it right. Like, we don't actually kind of vote with our dollars. We don't actually, you know, show what we value. We kind of just do whatever we want that is beneficial for us. And then we kind of whine about it. And I thought, yeah, we're not doing it quite right. Mm-hmm. It's not really a system's fault, but like, but when, if I have the option to, buy some quality froyo and, have it benefit somebody else or just kind of go into the pockets where, I mean, people are working there. I'm sure there's a benefit to it in general, but like, you know, I feel like it's doing something. It's simply a choice that I would make if I'm making a distinction between the two.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I will 100% say I think the thrift store business has a lot more tangible good. I mean, because there is a higher quality item that's being provided for lower people that need that.
Yep.
Yeah, out of froyo, it makes people happy. It creates a family atmosphere. But, you know, I go back to is, but it's also high turn. I mean, that's part of the reason why we did it is it's high turn. You know, you're there for 15 minutes. And you go in and out, and so you get a lot more turn out of that, which means we're going to be able to present to a lot more people.
Yeah, right. Well, and it probably opens up your exposure level. Not everybody goes to a thrift store.
Right.
But froyo crosses all economic lines and people groups. Everyone loves a froyo.
Right. Well, and that's where going back, there's a stigma about thrift stores is that, well, you know, I'm not walking to a thrift store. And so, again, how do you engage people? Usually it's a different clientele. It's a different customer that's walking in there.
Yeah.
So it allows us, again, to, again, share that message to a broader audience, which then allows us to hopefully get more people involved and interested and creates more good that's going to come out of it.
I will say there were a number of very fashionable dinnerware sets at that at the one in Grimes. I mean, it looked nice. I thought, I can't pull this off with my table and chair set to have these nice of plates. Luckily, though, I found two bowls. I bought two bowls from the Walmart 5 years ago, and one of them had broken, and now the Walmart doesn't sell them anymore. Luckily, someone had put two of them over at your joint in Grimes, and now I'm two bowls the richer with a matching set from my Walmart piecemeal, you know, $1.50 bowls, and I was really happy about
it.
I mean, I was elated.
Fantastic. Yeah, it is crazy the amount of stuff we have. I mean, it just blows me away. I mean, when I first started doing this thing, I was always super concerned about, well, are we going to have enough stuff or not? That is not my concern anymore because we got stuff coming out our ears. For me, the concern is always, do we have enough shoppers coming to the door?
Yep.
And then do we have, because we run with a lot of volunteers.
Yeah.
We up in Spencer just this last month, we had 800 hours donated of time that people gave to the organization. And that's where we really make a difference. If we can get volunteers engaged in volunteers giving, that's where that all of a sudden frees up for us to be, number one, is it creates the value in the store. Big. I mean, we have enough staff that we can barely keep our head above water. You know, we're going to maintain, but man, we are like drowning.
Yeah.
We're still at least not dead. But the volunteers allow us to really make it something special.
Right.
And then that also allows us to not have to, you know, spend all that extra salary, which then hopefully goes to, the place like Haiti and local impact programs that we're talking about.
So how many different places do you have?
We've got a thrift store in Grimes, right on 141. Just down from Toyota Des Moines, before Sky Zone. People in Des Moines know that. Like, before Sky Zone, after Toyota Des Moines. We have one in Spencer, Iowa. And then we've got Froyo shops in Grimes, Pella, and Oskaloosa.
Was it, wait, was the one in Spencer the pop-up? There was like, there was a pop-up one.
Pop-up store just opened. So actually in the winter months in Pella right now, because Froyo is not the best in the winter.
Right, right.
And we've learned that, it is very seasonal. We transformed the Pella store into, it's a mango tree during the summer, and then it's a thrift outlet pop-up store for 4 months in the winter. So November, okay. December, January, February. Again, utilizing resources. Because I lose money on those stores in the winter.
Right.
And we have all this stuff, and we might as well use it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you Froyo shuts down.
Right.
And
then we transform the store. We transform the store totally. And then we basically bring in all of our stuff that in a smaller space in a different community. And that's actually something that we believe is really replicable because, we can go in a lot of different communities and put in a pop-up store very quickly,
right.
Very easily. And it allows us to enter into that community and give a presence, mm-hmm. to start talking these conversations, and people have stuff. And so then right. we can do that pretty easily.
That's right. And there's especially in kind of smaller spaces, correct. And in smaller towns, like, yeah, there's probably a ton of opportunity.
Absolutely. There. Because the problem in small town, again, they want to shop there, but there's usually not enough breadth of stuff.
Right.
Because they don't have enough, you know, the town's just not big enough to supply it. But we're pulling from Grimes we've got a lot of stuff back there. So
yeah.
How do we get that in front of the most eyes? How do we use this the best way possible? And ultimately for all of us, because how do we stewardship our gifts?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, people, let's say they've heard all this stuff and they said, you know what? I like the sniffs right. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get involved. What are the various ways people can get involved in what Many Hands for Haiti is doing?
So locally, a couple very easy. Again, we try to make, I call them on ramps, very simple ways to get involved. Shop at the stores. You can go to Grimes and you can go shop. Every dollar that you spend there, that, you know, clears our, we got a bogey, obviously we have rent and we have overhead, that kind of stuff, but we can clear it with enough shoppers, and then that money all goes to profit local and global ministries. You can donate your stuff. The more stuff we get in the back door, the higher quality stuff we get in the back door, the more we can put on the floor, the higher dollar you're going to get, the more money that's created there. And we've all got stuff.
Yeah.
You can do a bundle of bottoms party, which basically what you talked about there with the t-shirts. We've all got t-shirts. You can cut up t-shirts, which then allow us to have a, and there's a video that goes with it, so you can share about what's happened in the ministry. And then those go down to Haiti and provide jobs for women down there. We have what's called our Give Joy campaign at Christmas. And so it's a catalog that we have that's all alternative gifts. So you can, buy a goat for $50, $60.
Oh, yeah.
You can sponsor a classroom so that the kids can have school. You can buy a meal for $30. You can give a Bible for $10. You can buy a bunch of bananas for women to be able to go sell in the marketplace. I mean, there's a wide variety of gifts. And so we have that every year that we do.
I love that. That's super tangible, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can
back to product. Yeah, so that's one of the things for me. It's like a top layer of what we do is commercialism. I mean, this purely you can buy stuff. The second level down that we talk about is if people want to go deeper is how about you volunteer a little bit of your time? We all have time. It's just a matter of how you want to use it. And, of course, particularly the younger and the older usually have a little bit more time on their hand. I mean, people like us that have kids, it's a little bit
more. We're doing internet radio at 11 p.m.
Exactly. There's a reason why. But, you know, so there's that. But then there's also the treasure. And what we try to do is – you know, there's an elephant that we all have to take care of, which is this global poverty thing that we talked mm-hmm. about. But you can't just swallow the elephant whole. You have to have tangible bite-sized chunks. And if you get enough people just taking tangible bite-sized chunks, you start making a difference. So we take this big elephant, we try to break it down. So don't worry about all these people that don't have homes. Don't worry about all these people that don't have access to education. Here's one family. Here's their name. Here's their picture. Here's their situation. We need $50 to give them a go. We need $300 to put a cement floor in. We need $35 a month. We'll get them to go to school, have access to health care, and have food for their family. And just worry about this one.
Yeah.
Because it's a step down. Again, don't worry about the whole, just worry about the step.
Yeah.
Just this step. It's kind of like when Jesus came and the disciples first saw Jesus, you know, he was teaching, he was preaching, and he said to Peter, hey, can I just borrow your boat to preach in? He didn't say, hey, go with me there. He said, I want to borrow your boat. You know, I'm not going to go out, I'm just going to borrow your boat. And then he asked him to go fishing. You know, it wasn't, but it's a step progression there. There wasn't just like he went from teaching to follow me. It was like, no, he went from here to, can I borrow your boat? Oh, hey, you want to go fishing? Hey, I showed you all these fish. Now will you follow me? I mean, there's a progression there. And mm-hmm. so again, you can do project sponsorship. You can do different types of things in that tangible way. We have about 200 to 300 people that go a year to Haiti. If you would love to engage and actually talk about going on a trip, we would love for that to happen. And we engage with trips, and we do all the coordination of it. We do everything. So if there's a church, in particular, we usually like to work through churches. Yep. There's like to be a group of people that are going to go together. But if there's a church that's interested, we manage all the flights, all the hotels, all the projects, all the pre, the during, the post trip for you. So all the church has to do is say, we have ready and we're available.
Yeah.
Ready and willing. Help us do this well. And we'll go and step in and do that for them. And so those are some very easy, tangible ways to get involved. And prayer. Prayer is a huge one. We have a on our website, there's a place where you can sign up to be part of our prayer team, our prayer list that goes out every other week with prayer requests from Haiti, prayer requests from the United States, because we need prayer. We're in spiritual darkness. It's a battle. And we need prayer every day. And if you just, you know, if you just want to really... Again, very low-key. We have a very active Facebook page, a very active website. Like us on there. Follow along. See if this seems something you want to do more with. You know, it's not difficult if you are intentional.
Yeah.
But you have to start taking some steps, because God can't move a stone that's not moving. I mean, you don't get to someplace by just being standing still and not doing anything. You got to start moving. And when you start moving, God's going to start directing you.
Right.
But you got to start taking some steps.
And before I leave this, I meant to ask this just a little bit earlier. How has, weather's generally it's an issue, especially with the infrastructure that you're talking about that's in Haiti already. What did the aftermath of Matthew look like, for you guys and the work that you're doing in Haiti?
So we are in the north central plateau of Haiti, and where Hurricane Matthew hit was in the southwest side, and we thought it was going to hit in our area, but we are luckily very protected by mountains. So in our area, we only got like 3.5 inches of rain, and nothing really happened there. But in the southwest, they just got pummeled. I mean, we're talking 95% of the homes got wiped out. The 90% of the churches got wiped out. The schools got wiped out. The hospitals got wiped out. The livestock got wiped out. And there is no insurance. People got to understand, there is no insurance to come in there. There are no government programs to go and rebuild. It's not like you can just go to, you know, FEMA and they're going to go do something. There is no place to go. And a lot of people have said that this is actually more damaging long term for Haiti than the earthquake was, because the earthquake... It hurt bigger buildings, you know, like, yeah. If it was a one-story building, it probably didn't fall down. If it was multiple-story buildings, those are the ones that fell. Well, those are usually owned by richer people.
Yeah.
Richer people have access to actual resources. The hurricane destroyed mud and stick homes. They destroyed homes that had banana leaves, tree leaves, you know, tin roofs. It was a 30-mile-wide swath that had 145-mile-per-hour wind. I mean, you're talking a 30-mile tornado,
yeah,
running through an area, and it killed everything in its path. I mean, and so livestock was destroyed, and all the crops were wiped out. That doesn't just mean for today that's a problem. That means in 3 months, when I thought I was going to get a harvest and there's no harvest, that's when it starts hitting. And so we actually, our team of people went down there, a couple weeks ago, and then we just assessed the situation. We did a mobile clinic, down there. And what we have said is, number one, is we're not taking any percentage of any donation that comes in. It's all going directly to the people. And we are not a relief agency. There are a lot better relief agencies than we are. We are a development agency.
Yep.
So we are coming back in, and we're partnering with an organization that does coffee trees, because a lot of the coffee plants were wiped out down there. So they are rebuilding the coffee plantations in the southwest. So we're providing financial resources for them to go do that. We're putting roofs back on homes. So we're again partnering with a local organization that's doing it right in there, hiring jobs from that area to go put roofs back on the homes. And then we're looking at replanting peanut fields through another organization that they needed their peanuts to be replanted in their fields. And so that's what we're engaging in that particular area.
Gotcha. Awesome. And I did notice at the thrift store you could buy was that locally sourced coffee?
Yes.
That's available.
Yep.
There?
Yep, that's coming right out of Haiti.
Awesome. Yeah, lots of cool opportunity there. So I think there's a lot of ways to engage here, right? You could go to the website. The website for them again was?
Yep, it's www.mhfourh.org. So mh4h.org.
There you go. You can visit the website. Lots of cool information out there. And I like the Facebook page. Lots of stuff going on there so you can get involved. And I think there's just a lot of different levels to get engaged. So if you're on the fence, start low. And I think mm-hmm. the process of it being part of something like that, if God is tugging you that way, you'll know it. And if he's got something else for you, even the start of the process of engaging with this may take you a different direction, but it will take you in directions that God is engaging you with. So I think that's a solid step either way. So definitely jump in that. Yeah, very cool. Tim, so much. Thank you so much for coming in. Lots of really cool information. I'm doing the diaper thing. We're definitely doing that. I was excited about that when I saw it the first time, and now I got lazy. And now Tim's... I mean, he wasn't guilting me with his eyebrows, but I felt it stinging a little, so I'm going to get on that. But lots of cool stuff. And go out to the Grimes Thrift Store. There's there's some nice place settings out there that you can pick up that locally sourced coffee, the handmade jewelry and stuff. And
yeah, we have a big furniture section.
Oh, man, yeah.
Big furniture section and a lot of clothes. I mean, and then your typical thrift store stuff. But, I mean, it's a very big clothing section. And we have a lot of really nice high-end stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then we've got the furniture and the home decor and then the odds and ends and a lot of toys, a lot of books. And then the we call it Solid Ground for Haiti, which is all of our Haitian goods, which is all brand new stuff. So for, you know, those that you're like, well, I'm not a thrift store shopper, where we've got jewelry, we've got metal art, we've got coffee, we've got aprons and purses.
Oh, and bags and stuff. And yeah.
Bags all, cool bag. All made. And that's actually made at an orphanage in Ghana. There's another connection that I've made there. And so, but all directly helping people. It's direct sourced. So.
Very cool. Yeah. Make sure you get engaged in that. Tim's going to hang out. We got just a little bit more of the show to go. In fact, we have some advice. People need advice, and we'll be going through a little bit of advice. But Dan, the social media maybe is where I saw it, but it do tell that you've been mistaken for the Pope.
Yeah, it's crazy. People are showing up looking for advice, and I don't know. It could have been the hat I was wearing. I'm not sure what it was. So, I've got to give them some advice and get them off my lawn.
That's the deal. If people are going to mistake you for the Pope, the only thing you can do is come out on the balcony or porch or whatever you got and give them something.
Got to give them something.
Otherwise,
they're
not
something.
Going anywhere.
Give them a token of something.
All right, so what's your Pope-style advice?
So here's the deal. It's kind of like there's layers of this whole thing that kind of led up and climaxed today for me for a moment. This started 12 months ago when my two daughters and myself were planning on going to Kentucky this week to a missions conference, international missions on international conference on missions. Anyway, they're both all excited about this. My youngest one is planning to go into dentistry. She wants to go into third world countries and do mission trips, and some of the stuff we've been talking about is like, it's just totally what's I've been in
to good preparation today. For you. Yeah.
So it's been kind of cool, and so we've been planning this forever, and that now she's a student in college. And part of the whole deal being in college is you often have a college job, right? So she has this dorky little job that she hates, working in the cafeteria at Iowa State University, and you know, 40 billion people go through there, and nobody cares. And but she works like 10 hours a week, so it's no big deal. Well, I find out today that she can't go to this missions conference because she has a 5-hour shift.
Nope,
a 5-hour shift out of this week that no one will fill.
Oh no!
And I'm like, man, this is terrible. Well, a little more layer to this. Today, I'm preparing for a lesson tonight. We have a class going on spiritual disciplines, right? And tonight's was simplicity. And like almost everything you guys have been talking about tonight has been totally what we were talking. I felt like I was reliving the conversation and the stuff I was restudying and reading about today. And so I'm going through this whole thing on simplicity and, you know, how this inner thing. You got to get it on the inside, and it's just an outward expression of what's going on in the inside. Simplicity is, right?
Yep.
You can't do one without the outside, without the inside. It becomes legalistic. You know, I mean, you got to have both, right? And simplicity is, you know, getting rid of all the extra junk, and so it could be possessions, it could be your finances, it also is your words, you know, and at this moment, I'm looking at, you know, when Jesus says, let your yes be yes, your no be no, you know, part of your simplicity is your language of just be truthful, you know, just say, when you say you're gonna do something, just do it, right? And I'm reading them, and that's when I get the text from my daughter saying, hey, I can't go. To this mission trip, and I'm like, well, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
And so I text her back, well, why not? You know, I got to work. Well, how many hours are you working? 5. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, that's stupid. You know,
right?
This is like, you know, kingdom stuff. This is like life changing stuff. This is like your future. I mean, all these things are going through my mind. So I text her back, and say, well, why don't you quit? She's going to, in other context, she's going to quit in like 3 weeks anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So she's not going to do it next semester. And she, you know, semester's going to end soon. And I'm thinking, well, who cares? You know, just quit. And her text back is like, well, I think it's kind of a character thing. I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, dang.
I'm like, oh. Well, yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, just like letting your yes be yes, right? She's like, I've agreed for the semester. It's not like a regular job. You could quit, you know, if you worked at Burger King or whatever. It's like, eh, not going to go. No, I'm going to quit. They just say whatever.
Yeah.
But this, like, she's committed to the end of the semester.
Yeah.
And she's going to do it, even though it's going to cost her what she really wants to do.
Right.
You know, and I could justify it in my head saying, well, no, you're doing Kingdom. This Jesus is bigger than Iowa State's, you know, whoever's serving peas that day. Nobody cares, you know? And anyway, so that was a big lesson to me, even though I know the lesson. You know, you can justify a lot of stuff in your life.
That's true.
And you can justify not being simple or honest or, you know, letting your yes be yes. And my 19-year-old schooled me today, and I'm like, oh, man. So here's the deal. If you agree to do something, do it. And you know, that's part of integrity as a follower of Christ. Get off my yard.
Get off my yard. There are no rational reasons to lack integrity. Yeah. I could see that, Dan, though. <It's> like, hey, why don't you just quit?
Yeah, it's like, what was it? You owe them nothing, though. You know, and I told them I'd stay.
All right, that's Pope style advice from Dan. You're welcome. Get off his lawn. All right, we got a couple rounds of Dear Life from the Path, and then we'll let you go for the evening. Here it is, number one, Dear Life from the Path. I'm 19, and for the past year, I've been out of my parents' house at last. I'm realizing now that the years I spent with mom and dad were different than other people's. My parents weren't physically abusive, but they were mentally and emotionally abusive, and it has scarred me in some ways. Because I was never allowed to speak my mind, I shut down if anybody raises his or her voice to me. When I was growing up, they used exercise as a punishment. If my brothers or I were late, it was 10 push-ups. They also forced us to go through exercise programs. Naturally, as soon as I was free from them, I stopped exercising altogether. I now realize I need to exercise again as I am technically obese, and I need to lose the weight while I'm still young. My problem is I'm not motivated. I tell myself I'll go out and run, signed up for a gym, even got a running buddy, but I find myself making excuses and tricking myself out of going. What are some ways I can help myself mentally so I can get going on this ever-growing problem? What are our thoughts?
Wow. Here's my problem.
Okay.
Was this a female or a male?
I don't
know why I thought it was a girl.
Not specific.
Okay, I shouldn't jump to conclusions. I think here's the deal. They're undisciplined and lazy, and I don't believe what they're saying. That's what I think.
About the parents thing?
I mean, I think they're exaggerating a little bit. I mean, none of us were there. How do we know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm sure that happened at least once or twice, you know, or a few times. I mean, you don't make something like that up, I don't think, you know, do push-ups or whatever.
Yeah, right.
But if she went from what sounds like a fit person from a fit family to obese, and she's 19, or that person's 19.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously issues. There's discipline issues there.
Yeah.
She doesn't like discipline, and I don't know. I keep going to sheep park because I have daughters. I'm thinking,
yeah, right.
thinking of that way. So my advice would be you need some self-discipline. I mean, I can relate because I do the same thing.
That's what I was going to say. It's like if I look at the description, like ignore the parent stuff for now, validated, unvalidated. But when it says, I need to exercise, but I'm not motivated. I tell myself I'll go out and run, sign up for a gym, got a running buddy.
We'll do it.
But I make excuses and trick myself out of going. I'm like, welcome to the most of the free world, man.
Let me tell you what I did yesterday, okay? Yesterday, I'm at Walmart, right? And I'm buying this fine hunting shirt, right? And I'm walking around, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm giving myself this big, I mean, I was like a 15-minute pep talk. Okay, dude, it's time to get exercising again, mm-hmm. and you need to lose weight, and you need to be healthy. And I was really pumping myself, like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And I walked by, hey, there's a 50-cent pecan pie.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it on my thing, and I ate it on the way home. I thought, I'm going to start that tomorrow.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So I know where I can relate. I know the problem is discipline.
Yeah.
I know from experience.
Yep, I agree. Me too.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'd say, I mean, the other thing that I've always tended to go back to is you gotta make it simple. Like, you gotta take again these, you know where you need to get to, but, you know, just commit to doing this one thing. You know, you don't do all of it.
Yeah.
Don't go and say, well, I'm gonna get a gym partner, I'm gonna run anything, I'm gonna go and sign up, and I'm gonna go get new shoes, I'm gonna do this. Just do one thing and do it really well, because you gotta take one step at a time, one foot in front of the other. And I think sometimes we get so, we do all the stuff that really doesn't matter because it makes us feel better, when the one thing we really need to do is, well, you need to run. You need to stop going to spend money on gym memberships, and you just go out and
that's
go
what
walk,
I would do.
Or
I would buy my new shoes, and I would buy my outfit and get my membership, and that'd take a week to get all that stuff all lined up.
Right.
And then by the next week, you've lost interest.
Because you're busy. That makes you busy, and it feels good, but at the end of the day, it's not actually pushing the stick anywhere.
Not at all.
I actually did that when I was, I actually ran this year. I started running, and the reason I chose running was actually the very thing Tim was talking about. Like, it didn't cost me anything, and I could do it anywhere. So if I was out of town for work that week, I can still run. And so I don't have any legitimate excuse not to do it. And then I did do, though, as opposed to, like, buying the shoes and so, like, certain things up front, I got them as kind of rewards and stages. Like, I did, like, a couch to 5K thing. So, like, if after... one of my goals was if I got halfway through the couch to 5K, I could upgrade my headphones. I got you know, nice Bluetooth headphones that I could put in and save me a lot of time. Didn't have the thing. I ran in the clothes I owned until like, I don't know, it was like a month in. I thought, okay, I can buy a pair of, and it was, they're not like, you know, running shorts, but it was a $10 pair of shorts I didn't have before.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so it made sense as stuff as I went, as opposed to like, I need the headphones and the shoes and the blah, blah, blah. I ran in the shoes that I owned. I actually kind of just worn them out. I got to replace those shoes. But, you know, like that was, I knew that every other thing was some measure of excuse. I can't afford the gym membership anymore. I don't have a rowing bike or whatever it is that you use. Like, I can always get off of my butt and walk up and down the street.
Yeah.
And I can walk at work over lunch. I can run at home. Like, I will use my legs. And so, that was the very thing kind of Tim was getting at. It's like, I knew that if I had any excuse, I would take it. So I had to drive it down to its bare nothing and say, you're walking.
Couldn't do this.
Yeah, yeah.
So that'd be the encouragement. Get up and do something. Forget the parent stuff.
Well, and the parent stuff, too, is it goes back to is, you know, you can play the victim card if you want. Because it's basically, I mean, are you going to be a victim or are you going to own your past? Are you going to take responsibility? Because at some point... That transfers back onto you, and you can't control what happened in the past, but you can't control what's going to happen in the future. And so you need to, at this point, own that, you know what? That's done. That's finished. That book is done. And every day that I'm sitting on the couch not doing something, it's not my parents' fault. It's because I didn't go up and do it.
Yeah.
And until you get that mindset, you can make excuses all you want, but you got to own it in yourself. You got to own it in your head.
Yeah. And the truth is like, I suppose, especially if that is true, you have the ability to say, I will not give this a moment's more control over my life. So even if it was a completely accurate thing, you just look it in the face and say, look, that doesn't control me anymore. It will not be the reason that I'm the person that I don't want to be. It will not be the reason that I am obese. I will take control of that. That doesn't get to control what I do anymore. And so, like, either true or not true, your control is at hand. Yeah. Make a grab on it. Alright, secular advice was, your parents may have meant well when they insisted that you and your siblings get involved in exercise programs, but they were wrong to use exercise as a punishment. Well, I can see, doesn't the army do that? I mean, those guys come out pretty disciplined. While I can see why you know, now view exercise that way, its benefits are more far-reaching than weight loss. Being physically active benefits your heart and brain, and in addition, can be effective stress reducer. It doesn't necessarily have to be running. Perhaps tennis, bowling, or dancing would be more enjoyable for you. People, do you dance to lose weight?
I don't think of bowling is losing weight.
I bowl to lose weight all the time.
I mean, at least I can see dancing. You're moving all kinds of stuff.
I don't know about bowling. Bowling, man, I don't know.
Build up your bicep and the right arm.
And you know, tennis is not really an entry-level exercise. I mean, you got to have a buddy or a wall.
Yeah.
I some coordination.
Okay, so I'm in for dancing or running. I don't know about tennis and bowling.
Play some chess.
Tricking yourself can work two ways, but while I don't advise tricking yourself to make yourself get off the couch, I think the adage, the way to get out of a jam is not to get into one in the first place, applies here. Well, that's helpful. I mean, she's already in the jam. Some suggestions. When you get out of bed in the morning, have your exercise clothes already laid out. Instead of reading or listening to the news, put them on immediately. Then eat some protein to boost your energy and go out and do what you need to do. That would only work. I'd have to put them on before I went to bed.
Yeah.
Because I can just easily, walk by those as anything else. I'd have to sleep in that stuff. Second, don't expect to run a marathon immediately. I don't think she's suffering from that problem. Start slowly and remember the stamina isn't built overnight. Eventually you will establish a routine like brushing your teeth. Ooh, bad example. The dentist costs in the United States. I feel like we don't have good routines. I won't lie to you. It takes discipline. But now that you have escaped from your parents, you have to be your own parent. So it's up to you not to let yourself be lazy. Okay, that's okay. We agree on that. All right, hold on. Let's do one more. Nope. What is it? I gotta have Mike usually does this. There's too many of these here. Nope. That's not a good one. That one's a little testy. Okay, here we go. Dear Life in the Path, I've been dating Ian for 7 months. We met at work, and my friends convinced me to go out with him. I thought he was a nice guy, just shy. Now that we've been dating, I realize that's not the case. Ian plays video games a lot. They consume his life. He gets so aggravated that he slams buttons and curses incessantly. My nerves can't handle hearing it. I have anxiety issues, and when he does it, I nearly have a panic attack. When I tell him it's just a game, he won't listen. He is also critical of me. It's mostly about my weight, but he also tells me I'm horrible and stupid. Oh, for heaven's sakes. I think we could have given... I got an answer. He complains about the way I play video games, my cooking, etc. Sometimes he loses his temper and snaps at me. Oh, man, he has slapped me a few times. He's never intimate with me, but I know he's straight because he watches porn when he thinks I'm asleep. Oh, you couldn't have bundled this man up. You couldn't have bundled him up, Dan. We pretty much lead separate lives. Well, that seems like the right direction. But he talks about us getting our own place. We no longer work at the same company. I have a part-time job and go to school full-time, but he won't even look for a job, no doubt. Part of me wants to end it, but this is my first real relationship, and I'm not sure if I can do any better. Help.
Oh, boy.
Good night.
Oh, boy.
He's a walking stereotype, this guy.
Yes, he is. You need to make better choices. The first choice would be to go with your first instinct and end a relationship.
Yeah. I think he's on strike 19.
Yeah.
Tim, what are your thoughts?
I'm just going to give that girl a hug.
Yeah.
I'm just like, how can you get to the point where you don't think you can do better than that?
Yeah.
I mean...
You're so much more valuable.
You can throw a ball in the ocean better than that. I mean, it's just, that's just, and that's, so to me, it's more of the underlying issue is how does she feel that she is that worthless that she can't do better than that? And someone needs to intercede in her life, and she needs to understand too that she's a child of God. You know, she's buried in the image of Christ, and that message obviously has not been portrayed to her whatsoever.
He is physically and emotionally, that we know of, abusing her. I mean, abuse might be a strong word, but he has physically contacted her.
Yeah,
you know, and he degrades her. And I mean,
he's not a drop of joy or sunshine or support anywhere.
They've been dating for seven months. Oh. Yeah, not years, months. Like, that's about 6 months too long.
Yeah. I mean, it would only take two of these in any given circumstance for me to have otherwise cut something off. I think Tim's kind of nailed it here, right? Like, yes, I think your first reaction is that you need to be out of this thing directly. But before you enter into any a right relationship, because the last thing that was concerning me was, but this is my first real relationship. It stinks that this will be a lens through which you look at future relationships. It will be not fair to the guy on the other side, and frankly, it will set expectations way too low for you on what you're walking into. And so, like tangibly, like if she was in the with me, I would say you need to get out of that relationship directly. But also you need to find, try to get involved in the lives of married couples who have healthy relationships and soak that up, and be around that, so that you, to help reorient the lens. Cause unfortunately this is tainted that, and you need to clear that palate a little bit before you enter into another relationship, both for your benefit and frankly for the benefit of whoever it is that you, end up with.
Well, and the fact that she hasn't had another relationship, I mean, that's the thing, is like, I think especially a lot of times when, you know, you get your first job or you have, you know, your first of anything, you always think like, oh, well, I don't know if I could do better. I don't know if this is, you know, but you don't know. You don't know because you just don't know.
Yeah.
And so, again, trust life experiences. Trust those. Get some mentors in your life. Get some people. You need some people that will speak truth. There must be a lack of truth in her life from people around her. So she needs to bring some people around her that can speak some truth into the situation.
She mentions her weight. So she has a self-image issue there. She's conscious about that. And we can introduce her to another person who's wanting to lose weight. They could be workout partners.
Yeah, tennis. Tennis is on.
I mean, this could be a good partnership for both of them to maybe get healthy.
I think they got a game of bowling lined up right now.
It's going to be a fierce league. Fierce league. All right, secular advice. Here we go. End it now. You are looking at this the wrong way. From where I sit, it should be practically impossible for you to have a worse relationship than this one. Ian is immature, emotionally and physically abusive, and unemployed. Men who care about women don't treat them the way he treats you. Underline. Ian should not move anywhere with you. If he does, you will have a heck of a time getting this freeloader out. Also true. Not only that, you won't be able to find anyone else because it will appear that you're already involved. Well, I mean, I think technically by that definition, you are already involved. So, I mean, the last part's confusing to me. In either case... seems pretty consistent with some of the stuff that we were saying.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. We've made the world a better place. If not, just shy of midnight, it will carry on for days on the longevity of the net. So you're very welcome. If you have legit problems, don't write to us. We steal ours from other folks on the net. You should really talk to someone who knows what you're doing. But if you have kind of a silly problem of which you don't mind being on the other end of some sort of beratement, shoot us an email, info@lifefromthepath.org, and we'd be happy to supply that in your life if you're short on legit friends to tell you the truth. Big thanks to Tim Brand for coming in on Many Hands for Haiti. Make sure you go check out the website, follow them on social media, and above all, like, I'm glad you soaked that stuff in, but you're going to do that because that is the first step to taking step two, which is finding a way to get involved in some way or another. I promise there's a way for you to do so, even if it's just picking up a new China set from the Grimes store. So, Tim, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, and, you're very welcome. It's great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you bet. And let's see. We will see you next week. I believe Chris Akers is coming in. He's got a new album out. And that reminds me, his brother just released a new album. And you can find that on Bandcamp. It's donation-based. You're going to look for Jacob Stewart. He was in probably about 8 months ago, sang a song called Hounds of Heaven. Go to the website. Go to lifefromthepath.org. Do a search for Jacob Stewart or Hounds of Heaven. It was a good song. Guy's got a cool voice. He's a very interesting songwriter. And he's both those guys are... Jacob Stewart is Wayne Stewart's son. And they are brothers-in-law. Anyway, very, very talented family. And I believe next week, I'll have to double-check with Bova, but I think we're going to run into Chris Akers. So very cool. We will see you next week. In the meantime, please be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.